The text 14, chapter 11, canto 7. For a brahmana, there are six occupational duties. A kshatriya should not accept charity, but he may perform the other five of these duties. A king or kshatriya is not allowed to levy taxes on brahmanas, but he may make his livelihood by levying minimal taxes, custom duties, and penalty fines upon his other subjects. Purport. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the position of brahmanas and kshatriyas as follows. Brahmanas have six occupational duties, of which three are compulsory, namely studying the Vedas, worshipping the deity, and giving charity. By teaching, by inducing others to worship the deity, and by accepting gifts, the brahmanas receive the necessities of life. This is also confirmed in the Manu Samhita. Sannam tu karmanam asya trini karmani jivika yajanad yapane chaiva vishnudhach cha pratigraha. Of the six occupational duties of the brahmanas, three are compulsory, namely worship of the deity, study of the Vedas, and giving of charity. In exchange, a brahman should receive charity, and this should be his means of livelihood. A brahmana cannot take up any professional occupational duty for his livelihood. The shastras especially stress that if one claims to be a brahmana, he cannot engage in the service of anyone else. Otherwise, he at once falls from his position and becomes a shudra. Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami belong to a very respectful family. But because they engaged in the service of Nawab Hussain Shah, not even as ordinary clerks, but as ministers, they were ostracized from Brahminical society. Indeed, they became like Mohammedans and even changed their names. Unless a brahmana is very pure, he cannot accept charity from others. Charity should be given to those who are pure. Even if one is born in a family of brahmanas, if one acts as a shudra, one cannot accept charity, for this is strictly prohibited. Although the kshatriyas are almost as qualified as the brahmanas, even they cannot accept charity. This is strictly prohibited in this verse by the word apratigraha. What to speak of the lower social orders? Even the kshatriyas must not accept charity. The king or government may levy taxes upon the citizens in various ways, by revenue duties, custom duties, realization of fines, and so on, provided the king is able to give full protection to his subjects to assure the security of their life and property. Unless he is able to give protection, he cannot levy taxes. However, a king must not levy any tax upon the brahmanas and the Vaishnavas fully engaged in Krishna consciousness. So these six activities then... studying the Vedas, worshipping the deity, and giving in charity. These both the kshatriyas and brahmanas must follow. This they must do. Then, as particular... how do you say? Yeah. By teaching, by doing deity worship and getting others to worship, and by accepting charity, then the brahmanas will be maintained. This is how they will maintain themselves. Right? Through teaching, through inducing others to worship, or doing worship for them, like in the way of yajñas, samskaras, and that. And by accepting charity. So the kshatriyas, then those two, by teaching and by inducing others, they may also perform those activities, but they can't accept charity. They shouldn't do like that. Here, Prabhupada's pointing out that the purity must be there very strongly to accept charity. So that is the one aspect. The other is the passion, is that the mode of passion then doesn't allow for such kind of mentality. One will find that the satisfaction is not there on receiving charity when one wants to make that himself. Because one feels that one is doing things, one is performing activities. So therefore, therefore they will not be satisfied accepting charity, like that. King gives charity because he's friends to others, he maintains others, he gives protection, so he cannot accept charity. He takes taxes, right? He takes taxes. Now his tax is not a charity, because this charity is, they may give, they may not give, but the tax means they must give, because the king is protecting. He is giving protection, he is giving shelter, and because of that, then he can take taxes. If he doesn't give protection and shelter, he should not take taxes, because otherwise if he does, he will take all the bad reactions of all the citizens, all those people he takes taxes from. He will take all their bad reactions. Well, if he doesn't, he protects them, then he only gets a small portion, and generally what will happen is he gets a proportion of their good qualities, their good results. They perform pious activities, and he takes, you know, one-sixth of their profits, then he gets one-sixth, and protects the people, he gets one-sixth of their pious credits also. While if he takes tax and doesn't protect the people, then he gets 100% of their bad qualities. So therefore, a king should never accept charity. And he should never levy taxes unless he's going to protect the people that are under. These are very important. You're taking something from somebody, nothing comes for free. There must be something must be done. You take something like that. So the Brahmins also, they're accepting the charity. But at the same time, is they're also accepting reactions with that. That is one aspect that is there. We would see Srila Prabhupada sometimes that the persons were very, you know, the means of how they would get their money was not very good. He would not use the money himself. He would take the money and put it in the hundi, you know, the donation box for the deity. And it's up to Krishna how he wants it to be spent. But he wouldn't put it in accounts used for, you know, his own travel or other things like that. He wouldn't use it like that. Like this. And then it mentions that the Brahmana lives by charity here, and by performing these activities, teaching, getting others to worship, these he can do. He'll never accept the service of others. He won't work for someone else. So even here, Rupa and Sanatan, they were not clerks for the Nawab, they were ministers, but still because of that, they were considered that they had lost their position. Because, you know, they were, you know, the, how do you say, right? Yeah, because they engage in the service like that, because they don't exactly have this whole system with the Brahmins and how they do. They're not following the Vedic culture. So their ministers are like engaged in their service. They're just like the top. They're not clerks, but they're very high-level assistants. While for the king, the Brahmins are independent. But we can see with the others, they weren't. Like Sanatana wanted to leave. He was put in jail. You know, if he was respected as a Brahmin and this and that, that wouldn't happen. So therefore then, their position was not so, they lost, their position was compromised. Then, text 15. The mercantile community should always follow the directions of the Brahmanas and engage in such occupational duties as agriculture, trade and protection of cows. For the Shudras, the only duty is to accept a master from a higher social order and engage in their service. Text 16. As an alternative, so this is the normal duties. Now it gives alternatives unless, in case there's some difficulties, some emergencies. As an alternative, a Brahmin may also take to the Vaishya's occupational duty of agriculture, cow protection, or trade. He may depend upon which he has received without begging. He may beg in the paddle field every day. He may collect paddy left in a field by its proprietor, or he may collect food grains left here and there in the shops of grain dealers. These are four means of livelihood that may also be adopted by brahmanas. Among these four, each of them in succession is better than the one preceding it. So, purport. A brahman is sometimes offered land and cows in charity, and thus for his livelihood he may act in the same way as a vaishya, by cultivating land, giving protection to cows, and trading off his surpluses. Better process, however, is to pick up grains from a field or from a dealer's shop without begging. Yeah. So these are all... Yeah, all different activities that are given here. So, if a brahman is offered land and cows, then he may maintain himself in this way. Or he may, if he doesn't need these things, give them in charity to someone else. They may do either of these. So they may keep for themselves, or they may, and live by that process. But generally, we'll see they'll engage other people to do many of the things for them, herd the cows and take care of the agriculture and this and that. So in this way, then they would maintain some shudras to help them. And then the shudras would be maintained by this, and they themselves would be maintained. So this would be one way of doing. Then it says, better than that, he may depend upon what he's received without begging. Just whatever comes, he accepts. Something comes, nice. Something doesn't come, then that's not so. Then nothing is there. Or he may beg in the paddy field every day. It means that the farmers in the fields doing their things. He may go there every day and beg. Like that, beg from this. They're husking the grain. They're doing all these things. So he just goes and begs and they'll give something. Or after they've done their work, then he'll just go and collect the paddy that falls in the field. Because when you harvest the rice and that, when it's ripe, you don't want to harvest it earlier. If you harvest it earlier, no rice will fall off, but the rice will not be very mature. It'll be very small. It will not be full. So when it becomes very big and full, it becomes also quite dry. So when you cut the rice grass, then some of the grains will fall on the ground. And then when they thresh it, they get it off the rice husks, then some of it will also fall on the ground. So then one can go and just pick those up and collect those. And by doing that, then he can maintain himself. And then better than that is going to the shops where they sell the grains and everything. And afterwards, so as they're moving the sacks around, this and that, and whenever they check sacks, they have this very kind of like... about 1 foot long. It's a pointed implement that's got a like a. It's how you say? It's curved. It's like a. 270 degree tube. 90 degrees out of that tube is missing, and it has a point. And you stick that into the sack of rice or grain, whatever grains it is, and you pull it out. Then you can see what is the quality of that grains. Like that. Otherwise, how do you check what's inside the sack? So that's the system. Because the sacks are woven tightly enough to keep the grains inside, generally, but loose enough that you can poke one of these things through. So that goes on all day, looking at this, looking at that, people buying, and that just gets dumped on the ground. Because those people that deal with huge, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of sacks of rice, they don't care about few kilos of rice falling on the ground, so one can go and collect that. So each one of these then is considered, better than the one preceding it. We see is that there's the one is very active in the field, in one's house, one's doing the vaishyas occupational duty, just tending what cows one has received in charity, what land one has received in charity. But then one stays at one's place. And there's always the chance that one may think that he is doing, he's the doer, he's maintaining himself. So then better than this will be that if he depends upon what he receives without begging, This is like the neutral point. He's not actively creating his own economic development in this way, but at the same time as he is not going out and begging. Right? So this is then, how do you say? It is better than the other, but it's not as good as the aspects of begging. Then, begging, he may go every day to the paddy field. Or then, more than that, he goes and then collects. Because if he goes out, people see him, there's opportunity to speak, ask questions, do these different things. We see the Goswamis and other, like Sukadeva, they would only go to a house long enough for someone to milk a cow. Things like this. So they're going there, and during that time when they can speak, give a little, you know, some association will be there. One can ask questions like that. Not too long to get too involved, but not too short either. So the begging gives this opportunity. Then he can go out and collect grains left over. Then he's very much in this way also dependent upon the Lord. Or he may go to the shops of the grain dealers, because then you're much more dealing with the people. And by doing that, then you will see, you know, it creates the mood of humility and this and that. You have to go in where there's more people, because the shops are only where there's lots of people. Picking up from the fields, and there's a few people, right? Like that. Begging means you're going to one field, like that. Then, depending upon what comes, it just comes from wherever you are, like that. Text 17. Except in a time of emergency, lower persons should not accept the occupational duties of those who are higher. When there is such an emergency, of course, everyone but the Kshatriyas may accept the means of livelihood of others. Purport. The occupational duty of a Brahmana should not be accepted by persons in lower social orders, especially Vaishyas and Shudras. For example, an occupational duty of the Brahmana is to teach Vedic knowledge. But unless there is an emergency, this professional duty should not be accepted by the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, or Shudras. Even a Kshatriya cannot accept the duties of a Brahmin unless there is an emergency. And then, even if he does so, he should not accept charity from anyone else. Sometimes Brahmanas protest against our Krishna consciousness movement for creating Brahmanas from Europeans, or in other words, from Lechas and Yavanas. This movement, however, here is supported in Srimad Bhagavatam. At the present moment, society is in a chaotic condition, and everyone has given up the cultivation of spiritual life, which is especially meant for the Brahmanas. Because spiritual culture has been stopped all over the world, there is now an emergency, and therefore it is now time to train those who are considered lower and condemned, so that they may become Brahmanas and take up the work of spiritual progress. The spiritual progress of human society has been stopped, and this should be considered an emergency. Here is solid support from Narad Muni of the movement known as Krishna Consciousness. Here, Prabhupada says it as it is. So the duties of everyone else on a normal situation should not be done. In an emergency, they may be done. Whatever needs to be done. But only the Kshatriya still, even he's doing others' duties, then he cannot do, how you say? He cannot accept charity. That he still cannot do. It's just not proper. He's supposed to give protection. So he just doesn't accept charity. So here then, emergency, we see, has many understandings. So here, the main emergency is Krishna conscious emergency. Because when the Brahmins are in place, everything else works. The Kshatriyas are nicely trained. The society goes very nicely. So there's an emergency now because there is no proper regulation of the society by proper Kshatriyas because they're not being trained by Brahmanas. So in this emergency situation, people are not becoming Krishna conscious. So therefore, then even here we see that the Shudras are lower than Shudras, the Mlechas and Yavanas. Then they are taking up these duties, the Brahminical duties, and training others and preaching this Krishna consciousness. So if someone complains that it's not according to Shastra, then here is the Shastra quote on how it's possible. It's an emergency. the Brahmins and all that, they would do the preaching and do the training and all that, then there's no need for the Mlechas and Yavanas to do all these things. Then we can, you know, it's not necessary. But since it's not being done, then therefore, then these duties and all that, then we are doing.
You say that the kings...
A little loudly.
Kings should not accept, in any condition, charity. But very often we see that when one king goes to another king or someone visiting the king and he is bringing many gifts...
Yeah, but those are gifts. Those aren't charity. It's a different thing.
Falls into a different category.
Yeah, because the mood is that it's from one friend to another or to a senior or to a junior. It's more in the realm of just exchange, you know.
What is then the term? What does it mean, charity?
Charity means is that's the livelihood. The king is not maintaining himself by these gifts. These are just gifts, right? Like gifts, you don't sell them and, you know, or do stuff like that. Gifts are someone gives them and you keep them, you know. Unless it's edible, that's another thing. But if it's not edible, then it's generally kept, and it's something that you remember, and it helps remembering that person who has given it, you know, either out of friendship, you know, or compassion. I mean, just that mood of like protection or something like that, or out of respect, like that. So it's different. The whole thing comes down to the moods. All these different livelihoods, all these different things, these are they create different moods. That's why certain things are done and certain things are not done. See, the activity, the material activities to us don't matter at all. It's what creates a good atmosphere to become Krishna conscious. That's the thing. By performing proper activities, then it creates a Krishna conscious mentality. And then in that Krishna conscious mentality, then we advance. We advance. So what we're looking for is the advancement in Krishna consciousness, becoming more Krishna conscious. The activity is not what we're worried about. But the activity, this is the activity that Krishna has given. If you do this activity, you will get the result. Right? So that's what we're looking for. So the whole thing actually comes down to the mentality that's created, the exchange that is there. That's ultimately, so everything is personal. There's nothing impersonal in the Vedic culture. Right? There isn't anything. It's an illusion to think that there is. The Mayavad conception, or the impersonal conception, is actually stems from the material nature. You don't find the conception in the spiritual realm. When you establish the material world, then these conceptions come up of karma, jnana, and yoga. Otherwise, in the spiritual world, you don't have these. The relationships are there with the Lord and the devotees. You don't end up with these problems. It's a problem unique to the material world. Right? So everything is personal. That's what's going on. The relationships between personalities. And ultimately, you're trying to develop the relationship with the Supreme Personality. Right? So that's what's going on. Smarta means we get caught up in the rule and think that's the essential important thing. And we'll say no. But that doesn't mean that we don't follow the rule. We don't follow the rule for the rule's sake. And by doing that, we think that that rule is awarding the result. No, we perform the rule because we know it pleases the Lord, because the rule has come from the Lord. He is the origin of the rules. He is the goal of those rules. So by following those, then one becomes satisfied because the Lord is satisfied. So we want to please the Lord through our devotional activities. So we follow the rule. We condemn following the rule not for God. What's the use? Right? What's the use? Because on the wheel of samsara, it's a wheel. And you just keep moving around it, and sometime you're on the top, sometime you're on the bottom. It just goes like that. So if someone's on the top now, someone's on the bottom, it's just a matter of time before it switches the other way. So it's nothing special. Therefore, pious activities, impious activities, any activity is condemned if it's not in line with the Lord. But that doesn't mean that the Lord's path is not followed by the devotees. That's important. We condemn it, but it doesn't mean that we don't follow it. We condemn the impersonal application of it. We're just dealing with the mechanics to get the mechanical result. Our point is that it must be personally followed, that we perform the activity to please Guru and Krishna. Does that make some sense? Like that.
He emphasized this atmosphere that is being created by...
A little loudly?
He emphasized this atmosphere that is being created by a certain activity.
Mm.
Can you a little bit explain that? What does it mean, actually? It
means that when you perform, let's say, like we take 3 times bath a day. So we're not specifically interested in bathing 3 times a day. But it is the Lord's rule, so because He's given it, we follow it. And because we follow it, then He becomes pleased. We follow it with the purpose to please Him. He is pleased, this devotional service. We follow that rule because we know that taking 3 times bath is pious and it'll get us to the heavenly planets or get us some other material results. That's not very pleasing to the Lord. But at least that's better than rejecting the Lord's path. Like that. Even will badmouth karmis and jnanis and yogis like this, and they call them all kinds of names, still they're better than people who don't follow the Vedic culture. Right? Because at least they're situated properly, knowingly on the Lord's path. Means they're knowingly on the path. They don't necessarily know it's the Lord's path, but they're on the right. They have the externals of the path. So all now you have to do is add devotional service, and then it's complete. So now by taking bath, then that creates cleanliness in the mode of goodness. So in the mode of goodness, that's illuminating. Right? And then by it being illuminating, it creates an atmosphere in which it's very easy to be Krishna conscious. Right? So we're not just interested in the mode of goodness or knowledge, because that's still the mechanics side of it. We're interested in that Krishna wants it like this. We're going to go to Krishna's temple, associate with Krishna's devotees, and we don't want to be smelling bad. Right? So therefore we take bath. We're clean. Our clothes are clean. It looks very nice. So it's pleasing to Krishna. Like that. So that side of it. The mechanical side remains. It's still there. The mechanical side doesn't go away. You perform an activity, it will give a result. But we're not interested in that result. The result is Krishna's. Like that. We just do the activity because it pleases Krishna.
And in terms of giving charity and gifts?
In terms of giving charity and gifts. When you're giving charity, it's kind of... It's something for the other person. Kind of is for... How do you say? It's a different atmosphere. Like that. From Kshatriya to Kshatriya, they just don't give charity to each other. They give gifts. But they'll give charity to Brahmins. Or others may give charity to Brahmins. Even though it may be in the mood of a gift, still it's like it's their occupational duty. They accept those and they live with those things. Because their lifestyle is very minimal, very simple. Well, the Kshatriya, it's a different mood, the mood of charity and the mood of gift. Yeah, like that. One is more dutiful, and one is friendship.
So in just trying to be on a everyday platform. I'm a Brahmana, I'm worshipping the deity, and then someone is coming and giving me an amount to have the Seva Puja.
Hmm.
And then he's coming another day and he brings maybe jewelry for Srimati Radharani.
Hmm.
So one is a charity, the other one is a gift. Cannot be made categorically or both.
No, when you're dealing with the deity, then that's all. You don't give charity to the deities. Therefore, you're giving money for the puja seva, that's service. You know, you're giving the results of your activities to the Lord. Like that. So to the Lord, then it's always service. You can't give charity to Him, because it all belongs to Him anyway. You
know. So that specifically refers to the Brahmans, or the persons, not for what He's doing, because Brahmana is the one who's worshipping the deity.
Yeah, but see, now it's one thing if they give it, they come and give the money to the Brahman and say, here, this is for worshipping the deities, you know, you buy some boga or you do something with it for the deities. It's another thing if they come and say, here, this is money for you, so you can, you know, take care of yourself and like that. So that's charity. Like that. Means charity is given to the person for their own maintenance. Like that. Okay, text 18 through 20. In time of emergency, one may accept any of the various types of professions known as Rita, Amrita, Mrita, Pramrita, and Satyanrita. But one should not at any time accept the profession of a dog. I think it was called Swa. Yes, Svabriti. Svabriti. The profession of Unchashila, collecting grains from the field. This is what was explained before, is called Rita. Collecting without begging is called Amrita. Begging grains is called Mrita. Tilling the ground is called Pramrita. And trade is called Satyanrita. Engaging in the service of low-grade persons, however, is called Svabriti, a profession of the dogs. Specifically, Brahmins and Kshatriyas should not engage in the low and abominable service of Sudras. Brahmanas should be well acquainted with all the Vedic knowledge, and Kshatriyas should be well acquainted with the worship of demigods. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.13, Chaturvarnyam mayashrishtam guna karma vibhagasaha. The four divisions of human society were created by the Supreme Lord, according to the three modes of material nature and the work ascribed to them. Formerly, the principle of dividing human society into four sections, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, was strictly followed. But because of gradual neglect of the Varnashrama principles, Varnashankara population developed, and the entire institution has now been lost. In this age of Kali, practically everyone is a Shudra, Kalau Shudra Sambhava, and finding anyone who is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, or Vaishya is very difficult. Although the Krishna consciousness movement is a movement of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, it is trying to re-establish the divine Varnashram institution. For without this division of society, there cannot be peace and prosperity anywhere. Yeah, so he's saying here that any of these different aspects of what you're going to do can be accepted in case of emergency. But the Svabriti, then that shouldn't be accepted by the Brahmins and Kshatriyas. Like that. So they may do any of these others. And then Prabhupada makes the point is that the formerly this was being followed, the Vedic culture. It's been lost. And the Krishna conscious movement, one of its purposes is to re-establish it, re-establish, but on the divine principle of Daivavarnashram, not the Asuric. The Asuric and Daivavarnashram disappeared, so let the Asuric remain disappeared, and now we shall try to establish the Daiva. And that's the principle here. Yes. Swabrita, that's swa means dog. The vritti of a dog means working for someone else. Right? That's not done. But the other ones, like pramrita or satyanrita, means satyanrita, something true, something not truth. When you do business, it can't be fully telling the truth. Like that. So that's business. Then pramrita is you know, tilling the ground, growing things like that. So that can be done. Amrita is begging. No, excuse me. Mrita is begging. Amrita is not begging, just whatever comes. And rita, or truth, means just collecting grains from the field or from the market, like that. Like that.
In business, we have to
go home. Yeah, that's why it's called satyanrita. Like that, because if you say, yes, I went to Salem and I bought this for 100 rupees and I'm selling it to you for 250, you know, making some, you know, make a little profit here, and you think someone's going to buy it, you have to say, oh, very difficult, you know, brought from long ways away, so much trouble and this and that, we've been waiting for so long, like that, and we're so, but because, you know, you are such a nice person, we're selling it to you for a very cheap price. Only 250 rupees. Right? When you go to a businessman and you ask him, what is the price? He doesn't immediately say what it is. There's always, for you, there's a few moments. And while that's going on, he's calculating. This guy we could get 300 out of him. You know? So he's saying for you, because that means that's the price he's asking you for. You know, it sounds very personal and nice, but it means, yeah, this is the price I'm going to rip you off for. Like that. The other guy comes in, you know, they see some little skinny Bengali guy with his dhoti in his pocket, then they know, okay, I better sell it for, you know, 150. You know, otherwise he won't buy it. And then he sees the sahib come, and then immediately you just multiply by five, whatever the price is, and then speak. And then, you know, and it works. So that's called satyanrita. That's why trade and all that's generally said after. The best thing is agriculture and taking care of cows. Right? That's the best. And if that's not there, then trade. Any of those they can do. Like that. But generally, taking care of the cows, plowing the field, these are the, you know, the best, just like a rita, you can collect grains from the field or from the market. Of the two, the market's better. Like that. You know, so they have their variation. So in the business, then tilling the ground or doing business, then they both fall in the same category. Though of the two, then the farming and cow protection is considered better than the business. Like that. Does that make sense? Text 21. The symptoms of a brahmana are control of the mind, control of the senses, austerity and penance, cleanliness, satisfaction, forgiveness, simplicity, knowledge, mercy, truthfulness, and complete surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. In the institution of Varnashrama Dharma, the symptoms of a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas are all described. The ultimate aim is Achutatmatvam, to always think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna or Vishnu. To make advancement in Krishna consciousness, one has to become a brahmana with the above-mentioned symptoms. So here, this is the essential element in the we saw before is that the all those nice qualities were there, the 30 qualities. Now the last 9 of them were Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, like this. So these were all meant human life. So the human life means actually devotee, because they're inquiring about the Supreme. Others aren't inquiring about the Supreme. The jnani, the karmis, the jnanis, the yogis aren't inquiring about the Supreme. It may look like it, but they're not really. So the one who's performing devotional service, then that's actually inquiring about the Supreme, because this, whatever they're doing is in relationship to the Supreme. So then, and then that is the basis on which human life is established, and then of that, then you have those who have then more refined of these elements. So here then the brahmana is being described. So this nature of the brahmana, that is there and must be seriously established for anyone who wants to make serious advancement in Krishna consciousness. That's the point. So the serious advancement in Krishna consciousness, the brahminical qualities must be there, or attempted for, because the Brahman, realized Brahman, is a devotee. So if one wants to be a devotee, it's natural, then one will develop the brahminical qualities. So they're not separately endeavored for, but one endeavors to associate with devotees, that one gains these qualities. One attempts to study and hear the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and then practice it. And then by these things, then all the bad things in the heart will go away. All the anarthas will go. Then these qualities will manifest, because these are very natural qualities for the living entity. Like that. So devotee means that they follow this brahminical character, brahminical culture. Though they may have conditioned nature of the other varnas, but they have the qualities in their conscious effort to advance the spiritual life of the Brahmana. This is a very important element to understand Daiva Varnashram. Otherwise it's very hard to understand.
So actually this is what you just described, Maharaj. This is the reason why we say that if someone just starts to chant Hare Krishna and follows the regular life principle, then he will sooner or later be elevated to that platform.
Yes.
Because of this, what you have described.
Yeah. Means the endeavor must be there. But the main thing is that if one, you know, chants Hare Krishna and associates with devotees, it will come. Because if one associates with serious devotees, one naturally starts to develop their qualities. By associating with them, the Lord is very pleased. Right? The Lord expects us to associate with devotees. If we do that, He's pleased, and then all these anarthas go away. Very important aspect. Because the anarthas are going to go by sadhusanga. That's why Shraddha Sadhusanga. When we have faith, we got the faith by associating with devotees. Then, when our faith deepens, then we associate more seriously with devotees. So sadhu sangha is very important. Then comes bhajana kriya. Then we are able to perform very seriously the activities of Krishna consciousness. Right? Like that. So this is how it goes through. So that sadhu sangha is always there. It's not that one moves from one to the next, the last one's given up. You have shraddha. Then when you take up sadhu sangha, you give up shraddha. And then when you take up bhajana kriya, then you give up sadhu sangha. When you take up anartha vritti, then you give up bhajana kriya. Right? No, these are always going on simultaneously. And each one is dependent upon the last one being accomplished, you know, being in good standing. Right? Bhajana Kriya can't take place seriously unless there's good association with devotees. We see when we're in strong association, the bhajan is strong. When we're not in good association or in no association, we see the bhajan becomes weak. Like that. So then we can see that. And unless bhajana kriya is going on, how do you get rid of anarthas? Yeah, and association depends. If there's no faith, there's no association. So then we can understand from this, if we don't have faith in devotees, especially the senior devotees, then how will we associate with devotees? We won't take the association very seriously or important. We won't make that endeavor. Therefore, the bhajan won't go on very nicely. And anarthas then will not be going away. They'll be increasing. Nishtha won't be there, fixed in devotional service. Taste won't be there. Attachment won't be there. So it's very important. When the Shraddha goes, the whole thing collapses. So Shraddha is very important. But one has to understand the process so that one can maintain that Shraddha. Right? Like that. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that was one of his, that was in his final instructions. Then he said, don't be worried about, you know, basically who goes away from Krishna consciousness. You know, don't worry about all those unlimited amounts of people engaged in materialistic activities. Don't worry about them. You know what Rupa and Raghunath have given. The process of devotional service, the perfection of devotional service, the chanting of the holy name. That all this has been given. And by following it, one will become perfect. Others follow it or don't follow it. That's up to them. But we must have that faith and follow it. And we must keep that association by which we feel we are able to become more serious. Like this. So he makes that point. Because it's understood. There's always going to be problems. You know? Prabhupada says, and he's quoting from his own, from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that if all this work has been done, you know, so much preaching, temples established, so much money has been spent, so many programs have been done, if from all of that one person becomes a pure devotee, then it was all worthwhile. Because Krishna is so pleased by even just one person taking up seriously his service, and again becoming re-established in his service. That pleases Krishna so much. So all that is worth it. So if all that's worth it, then we have to understand that we have to be determined to be fixed in devotional service. And not become bewildered by what happens around us. We know what the philosophy is. We know what the process is. We just follow it. And we associate with those who have the same understanding. And those that don't have other understandings or are not so serious or, you know, have too many anarthas, then we avoid their association, but we don't criticize. Just avoid. You know, we have our work. We don't have to worry about others. Right? What's it got to do with us? We can make it something to do with us, just like we can make it very important about still after, you know, so many years, the oil that was spilled on the coast of Alaska by the Exxon, you know, oil tanker, you know, is still giving trouble there and disturbing the ecology there, you know. It's still going on. And it's been years, and they spent so much to clean up and did so much propaganda saying they cleaned up, but it's still going on. Right? And because of this, it's throwing off the whole, you know, the whole, what is it, eco-culture that's there. And because of this, it disturbs so many different things. And then, you know, naturally that's going to affect, you know, so many living entities and the weather. And then you got El Nino. And then, you know, all these different things happen. And we can just bring it this. So if we want, we can try to, what do you call it, you know, connect everything to ourselves. Right? And that it bothers us. It has something to do with us that it's worth thinking about. But the recommended process is whatever is there, we connect it to Krishna. Like that. But according to Krishna's system on how to connect it to Krishna, not our own made-up system. Right? Like we may feel it's very important to sit around and talk Jalpa about devotees all day, and because we're talking about devotees, we feel it's very good. But that's not the system. one should talk about those devotees whose qualities we want to develop. Because whoever you associate with, that's the qualities you're going to gain. You unknowingly associate with materialistic people, you will get those qualities. Just in the same way as you associate with advanced devotees, even if you don't understand the process, you advance. Because Krishna is pleased. You advance, associate with devotees, he's pleased. You advance. You don't associate with devotees, you associate with non-devotees, then you get the results of that association. Like that. So if one just can criticize, find faults in devotees, unless it's your specific service to help them, and you have a relationship with them that you can help them, you know, then okay. But otherwise, then you're only going to develop those bad qualities oneself. That's the thing. Oneself will develop those bad qualities. Because that's your association. You talk pujalpa, you're associating with those people that you're talking pujalpa about. And what are the qualities? They're bad qualities, right? No one talks pujalpa about good qualities. It's no fun, right? They talk bad qualities, so you take those qualities. So that is the system. So one has to be careful to see that faith is maintained, that understanding that this is the system given by Krishna, and it works. We follow it, it works. We don't follow it, it won't work. You know. Said the other day, you have a recipe, you follow it as the recipe says, you'll get the result. You don't follow the recipe, you have your own ideas, you can't complain that at the end it wasn't nice. Right? Like it says, you know, we're cooking some nice sweet rice and you decide, well, I'm going to put some Corella inside. And then if at the end it tastes bad, you can't blame the people who wrote the recipe. You know, it means what to do. So the point is one must develop the devotional qualities. Means they want brahminical qualities. So the brahminical culture is the basic culture of the whole Daivavarna ashram. For those who are seriously interested to go back to Godhead. And for those who are not, you know, necessarily so seriously interested, then it's those 30 qualities that we mentioned before. And just like establish human life. You know, general principles. These are the general principles to be followed by all human beings. Right? So this means not two-legged animals, human beings. Truthfulness, mercy, austerity, or observing fast on certain days of the month. Prabhupada mentions in the word for word, meaning Ekadasi and festival days. Bathing twice a day, tolerance, discrimination between right and wrong, control of the mind, control of the senses, non-violence, celibacy, charity, reading of the scripture, simplicity, satisfaction, rendering service to saintly persons, gradually taking leave of unnecessary engagements, observing the futility of the unnecessary activities of human society, remaining silent and grave, and avoiding unnecessary talk, considering whether one is the body or the soul, distributing food equally to all living entities, both men and animals, seeing every soul, especially in the human form, as part of the Supreme Lord, hearing about the activities and instructions given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the shelter of the saintly persons, chanting about these activities and instructions, always remembering these activities and instructions, trying to render service, performing worship, offering obeisances, becoming a servant, becoming a friend, and surrendering one's whole self. O King Yudhishthira, these 30 qualifications must be acquired in the human form of life. Simply by acquiring these qualifications, one can satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these can satisfy because it's the Lord's path. And then we take that the step further of trying to... means we see that they're all the same here. Already here, control of the mind. You know, that's already one of those. Control of the senses is the next one. austerity, penance, cleanliness. So this is taking bath twice a day. Satisfaction. Yeah, that's there. Forgiveness. Mention that. Simplicity, that's there. Knowledge. You must read the scriptures. Mercy. Truthfulness. Yeah, truthfulness. No, mercy is right there in the beginning. Truthfulness, mercy, austerity. So most of these are all there for everyone. Basically, forgiveness, I think, is not. Yeah, so these are naturally the qualities of human society. So these are the qualities, and then the activities are there. You know, so then someone may have these qualities and perform brahminical activities. Someone will have these qualities and perform other activities. Text 22. To be influential in battle, unconquerable, patient, challenging, and charitable. To control the bodily necessities, to be forgiving, to be attached to the brahminical nature, and to be always jolly and truthful. These are the symptoms of the kshatriya. 23. Being always devoted to the demigods, the spiritual master, and the Supreme Lord Vishnu, endeavoring for advancement in religious principles, economic development and sense gratification, dharma, artha, and kama, believing in the words of the spiritual master and scripture, and always endeavoring with expertise in earning money. These are the symptoms of the Vaishya. So we see here being devoted to the spiritual master and the Supreme Lord. Then they're endeavoring for advancement in religious principles, so dharma, artha, and kama. So they start out with that. And believing in the words of the spiritual master and the scriptures. And then being expert in earning money. So they have faith in Guru and Krishna. They follow the Vedic culture. But their emphasis is on dharma, artha, and kama, and not moksha. Then, text 24. Offering obeisances to the higher sections of society, the brahmanas, kshatriyas, and vaishyas. Being always very clean. Being free from duplicity. Serving one's master. Performing sacrifices without uttering mantras. Not stealing. Always speaking the truth. And giving all protection to the cows and brahmanas. These are the symptoms of the shudra. So now, after hearing that, we can understand when we talk about shudras, then from the point of view of mlechas and yavanas, they're like light years in the upward direction. Like that. You know? They're not the guy, fat guy with the beer belly standing behind the jackhammer. Right? That's something else. Right? Here. Offering obeisances to the higher sections of society, the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. Being always very clean, being free from duplicity, serving one's master, performing sacrifices without uttering mantras, not stealing, always speaking the truth, and giving all protection to the cows and brahmanas. These are the symptoms of the shudra. Purport. It is everyone's experience that workers or servants are generally accustomed to stealing. A first-class servant is one who does not steal. Here it is recommended that a first-class shudra must remain very clean, must not steal or speak lies, and must always render service to his master. A shudra may attend sacrifices and Vedic ritualistic ceremonies along with his master, but he should not utter the mantras. For these may be uttered only by the members of the higher sections of society. These mantras means the Vedic mantras. Any mantras other than the Vedic texts, those can all be chanted. Unless one is completely pure and has been raised to the standard of a brahmana, kshatriya, or vaishya, in other words, unless one is dvija, twice born, the chanting of mantras will not be fruitful. So we can say, well, I like to chant, it's my nature, I all these different things, and, you know, do what you want to do and all this. But the point is, it says here that the mantras will not be fruitful. Because the mantras have to be pleased. When they're pleased, then you get your results. Like that. So they're not pleased. So therefore, the Vedic mantras are not chanted by those without the dvija qualities. The non-Vedic are, as we mentioned before, the memory. They're based on the memory of the saintly persons. Like that. So in other words, they've extracted the essence and give the practical applications of it. So those mantras are practical use. Well, the Vedic, then those are used in all the different sacrifices and that. They're apurusheya. They've always been there. They're always there. Then from hearing those, then the saintly persons then speak and establish the smriti. But shruti is always there. It's unchanging. Like that. Smriti may be put together a little this way or that way as the situation needs. Just like the smriti is there, but then it gets written down by Vyasadeva at the end of the Dwapara Yuga. And so he'll write it according to the people's needs. Like there's 4 million verses of the Puranas, but from that he chooses 400,000. Right? He takes 1/10. He doesn't take the whole thing. He only takes 1/10. We must remember, so out of 400,000, Bhagavatam's only 18,000. Right? So that's, like 1/25th. And then we think that's so big. So it's already been cut down so much. So like this he does with all the scriptures. The Veda is divided up. All these things he does just to make it so that people can relate to it. But otherwise, and their specific personalities, like that, the different mantras. The Bhagavatam that I understand, Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, then the whole book will be considered a personality. But in the Vedas, like the Purusha Shukta itself, that is a person. Like that. You're different Shuktas, different passages. They are different people. Like that. They're part of Veda. No, well, that's for the knowledge. It's specifically meaning the Samhita, the text. They're considered Shruti, but that's for the purpose of knowledge, not karma, activities. Here it says attending a sacrifice and not chanting the mantras. So that's in the karma section. So that will be the Samhita itself, the main body. That, the Brahmanas, like that. But the Aranyakas, which are the purposes, and then the Upanishads, which is a philosophy, that's not really seriously considered in that. Some may consider it there, but that's not so important. Okay. Anything else? Okay. 25. Translation. To render service to the husband, to be always favorably disposed towards the husband, to be equally well disposed towards the husband's relatives and friends, and to follow the vows of the husband. These are the four principles to be followed by women described as chaste. Purport. It is very important for peaceful householder life, that a woman follow the vow of her husband. Any disagreement with the husband's vow will disrupt family life. In this regard, Chanakya Pandit gives a very valuable instruction. Dampatyo kalaho nashti tatrastri svayam agata. When there are no fights between husband and wife, the goddess of fortune automatically comes to the home. A woman's education should be conducted along the lines indicated in this verse. The basic principle for a chaste woman is to be always favorably disposed towards her husband. In Bhagavad Gita 1:40 it is said, Strishu dushtasu varshneya jayate varnashankara. If the women are polluted, there will be varnashankara population. In modern terms, the varnashankara are the hippies, who do not follow any regulative injunctions. Another explanation is that when the population is varnashankara, no one can know who is on what platform. The Varnashram system scientifically divides society into four Varnas and four Ashramas. But in Varnashankara society, there are no such distinctions, and no one can know who is who. In such a society, no one can distinguish between a Brahmana, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, and a Shudra. For peace and happiness in the material world, the Varnashrama institution must be introduced. The symptoms of one's activities must be defined, and one must be educated accordingly. Then spiritual advancement will automatically be possible. So when we divide the society, then everyone knows what they're supposed to do, and everybody knows what they can expect from everybody else. Then one's training must be according to that. So therefore the training in the true Varnashram culture then is in how to properly follow Varnashram nicely. That means all these different rules and regulations must be understood, what they're for, and how to render those activities for the satisfaction of the Lord. So the devotional service and how the Varna and Ashrama system then relate to the Lord. This is what must be established. Like that. If it's not established, then no one knows who they are, who anybody else is, how to relate with anybody, how to deal properly, and so how there can be any peace and prosperity. So the whole point here is if we want peace and prosperity, then if we follow what is the our own nature, then automatically all the proper benefits will come. It says here, then spiritual advancement will automatically be possible. The symptoms of one's activities must be defined, and one must be educated accordingly. Then spiritual advancement will automatically be possible. So one must know what are one's duties, and one must be trained in them, and then one must do them. Then it will come. And that's why in the Vedic culture so much emphasis is put on education. The whole system is actually education. And then within the education, then very clearly one's duties are defined, why one must do them, and then one, if one is serious about spiritual life or about human life just in general, and spiritual life in particular, then one must do those duties. And then by doing those duties, then one actually makes spiritual advancement. Otherwise, how one will make advancement? If one can't follow the duties, how one will make advancement? Text 26 and 27. Translation. A chaste woman must dress nicely and decorate herself with golden ornaments for the pleasure of her husband. Always wearing clean and attractive garments, she should sweep and clean the household with water and other liquids, so that the entire house is always pure and clean. She should collect the household paraphernalia and keep the house always aromatic with incense and flowers, and must be ready to execute the desires of her husband. Being modest and truthful, controlling her senses, and speaking in sweet words, a chaste woman should engage in the service of her husband with love, according to time and circumstances. 28. A chaste woman should not be greedy, but satisfied in all circumstances. She must be very expert in handling household affairs, and should be fully conversant with religious principles. She should speak pleasingly and truthfully, and should be very careful and always clean and pure. Thus a chaste woman would engage with affection in the service of a husband who is not fallen. Purport. According to the instruction of Yajnavalkya, an authority on religious principles, Ashuddhe sampratikshohi mahapataka dushtita. One is considered contaminated by the reactions of great sinful activities when one has not been purified according to the methods of the dasavidha samskar. In Bhagavad Gita, however, the Lord says, Namam duskritino mudha prapadyante naradhama. Those miscreants who do not surrender unto me are the lowest of mankind. The word naradhama means non-devotee. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also said, Je bhaje se bada abhakta hina chara. Anyone who is a devotee is sinless. One who is not a devotee, however, is the most fallen and condemned. It is recommended, therefore, that a chaste wife not associate with a fallen husband. A fallen husband is one who is addicted to the four principles of sinful activity, namely illicit sex, meat-eating, gambling, and intoxication. Specifically, if one is not a soul surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is understood to be contaminated. Thus, a chaste woman is advised not to agree to serve such a husband. It is not that a chaste woman should be like a slave while her husband is Naradhama, the lowest of men. Although the duties of a woman are different from those of a man, a chaste woman is not meant to serve a fallen husband. If her husband is fallen, it is recommended that she give up his association. Giving up the association of her husband does not mean, however, that a woman should marry again and thus indulge in prostitution. If a chaste woman unfortunately marries a husband who has fallen, she should live separately from him. Similarly, a husband can separate himself from a woman who is not chaste according to the principles, description of the Shastra. The conclusion is that a husband should be a pure Vaishnava, and that a woman should be a chaste wife with all the symptoms described in this regard. Then both of them will be happy and make spiritual progress in Krishna consciousness. So if the purpose is to be Krishna conscious, then, and that is the main activity, and one has been trained in what are the duties, that's the thing, is one has to be trained, then all this works very, very nicely. Because then the husband and wife, then they are trained so they know how to behave. And so then they can cooperate very nicely together. If there's some discrepancy in that cooperation, then because of their training, they're also able to avoid that bad association. Then it works very nicely. But due to lack of training, then we see that even if they do separate, then they end up getting married to someone else. And, you know, sometimes it takes them a few tries before they kind of figure out how to, you know, find someone who's actually worth associating with. So training is very, very important. If that's there, then it reduces so much difficulties that are there. Because the Vedic literature is very balanced, as we see here. Is the wife's duties are different from the husband, but she is not obliged to serve someone who is improperly behaved. At the same time, is then she can't just whimsically just do whatever she likes, or neither the husband. Like this. So the balance is there. It must be seen. In the tradition, see, the whole purpose is to become attached to the Supreme Lord. So now, the man, because he maintains some attachments to the material energy due to past habits, then if these are very strong, the marriage life is recommended. But now in the process, then one must be able to give those things up. At the end, one must be able to forget all of these household activities and attachments and remember Krishna alone. Then one will go to Krishna. Otherwise, if the man remembers anything other than Krishna, then it's a guaranteed rebirth. So now, yeah, so he has to give up that attachments. So for the woman, then that is, if she can do that, that is best. She can also give up all those attachments. That's what also the process of the household ashram is for. But even if she can't, she is chaste or remembers that husband, and he is a great devotee, then whatever results he gets, she'll get. So if he goes back to Godhead, she just remembers him, she'll go back to Godhead. So out of the natural womanly attachment, she just remembers the husband, she goes back to Godhead. The husband remembers the wife, you want. So therefore, it's recommended to keep the mind fixed in one place. So that's why it's recommended that the women don't remarry. You know, only if the, how you say, the husband died very young. They got married, and generally before conceiving a child. If the husband dies, then some of the Dharma Shastras say, then that's possible, that's not a problem. But otherwise, it's not recommended. If she has children, then many times it's seen that it, though it may not be so, may or may not be so detrimental to the woman, to the children, many times it is. Right? It's just like mothers are universal. Right? Any very nicely kind woman behaves as a mother. You can relate to his mother. But finding the qualities of father in men is much more rare, you know, like that. Generally, you don't see it so much. So therefore, in the children's mind, it's much easier to relate to new mothers, but not new fathers, and especially for daughters. You know, daughters very much can't relate to new fathers. You know, because there's a, you know, unique relationship is there, and women are sensitive to even subtle changes in a relationship, you know, let alone a gross change, you know, like a new father. But just subtleties in the mood, someone doesn't speak to you that day or didn't look at you, is enough to turn the world upside down, like that. Men aren't so sensitive to those things. So therefore, because of the difference in the nature there, and a lot of consideration is there for the children. Because the whole idea of grihastha life is to raise Krishna conscious children. And then if the kids' heads get screwed up, then it makes it very difficult for them to become Krishna conscious. So that must always be very much thought of. Of course, when you're dealing with, you know, how do you say, first generation, you know, converted malechas and yavanas, then sometimes it doesn't work so smoothly like that. Yeah. So it's you know, there may be some slack there in the considerations, but it should never be considered normal. It may be accepted, okay, we're getting married for the second, third, fourth, fifth time, but it should not be considered all right and normal. Because we're malechas and yavanas, untrained, uncontrolled, therefore we have fallen to this platform. But at least at some point, okay, you know, we may get the marriage right and things may go a little smoothly. It's not ideal, but okay, we finally got it together, or we finally figured out that you can't get it together. Right? It's a material world. One or the other. And then, you know, it's working, and then we can go through the process, and then we can become relieved from those attachments. But it should never be thought of or accepted as normal, or especially legislated as normal. Because it's abnormal. It's not, if one knows psychology of human beings, it's not normal. One who is uninformed in the nature of human beings. Humans, I didn't say malechas and yavanas. I said humans. So if one is uninformed as to human nature, then one sees it that these things are very, very difficult. They create great disturbance. So one is always very careful about those things. But we understand that these things, not necessarily ideal, so if things aren't going nicely, okay, then we make the adjustments we can and do the best we can. But we should never become proud. You know, we should just further enhance our understanding of Trinadapi Sunichena, you know, Amanina Maana Dena. Respecting others who are, you know, doing better, being tolerant, being humble. Then it'll enhance, that mentality will enhance devotional service. We understand that because I'm unqualified, these things are going on. Like that. But if one is proud, and what's the problem, and you know, everybody else does it, then one's devotional service will not be enhanced by such a mentality. Right? So the whole goal of the whole process is to become Krishna conscious. And that, we follow the rules and regulations to create a mentality. So if we break the Vedic rules and regulations, which create and have a natural tendency to create non-pious, non-devotional mentalities, and we accept those activities, we should know that we have to be more careful. We have to be more careful. Like that. Because the activities themselves naturally create non-devotional mentalities. Well, if we follow nicely the Vedic culture, if we have that qualification, right? It mentions here the dasa samskar here. The dasa vidha samskar means the 10 different samskars. You know, the garbhadan, then the birth, the name-giving ceremony, the anaprasana, the hair-cutting ceremony, vidyarambha, all these different things. Then, if those are performed, then that generally will establish very nicely Hare Krishna, the living entity. But if not, we do the best we can. That's the whole point. The living entity tries to do their best. That's it. Right? Being in an informed position, we try to do our best. Does that make some sense? A little louder. Yes. Yeah. Well, if the separation is there and the mother doesn't get married, then it's not so much of a problem. But if she's going to get married again, then it's better to have them situated where they're comfortable. You know, like that, the daughter with the father, son with the mother, both with the, like that. Whoever is going to give the proper arrangement. But the difficulty comes is that sometimes the proper arrangement is not. You know, if the marriage thing didn't work, many times it doesn't matter. Whichever one they go with, it may not work. So if one of them was Krishna conscious, one wasn't, then naturally they're going to be better off with the one who is Krishna conscious. But if both are not Krishna conscious, and because of that there's a failure, then it doesn't really matter. You know, kids are going to get messed up wherever they go. Yes.
I remember reading that when Bhaktivinoda Thakur's first wife died, he was advised to marry again so that there'd be a mother for the children.
Yes. Yeah, like that. That's very. Because the whole idea is that the children are there. They must be taken care of. Because it's somehow or another much easier for the women to relate to, you know, another set of kids as their own. The men doesn't always quite happen like that. But for women, it's like any kid is, you know, fair game to feed and clothe and bathe and do all that kind of stuff. Like that. Yes. More between the daughter and the father. Why is that so tight, the daughter and father? Because the whole process for this to work, see, the creating of a chaste woman is then coming from the proper strict training of the mother, but that chastity is coming because there's the ability to work with men. So if the daughter can't work with the father, she's not going to be able to work with any man on the planet. And generally you can check. Any woman who has problem dealing with men and that, you check back and see what's her relationship with her father. You generally never see a woman who had a really nice, wonderful relationship with her father and then can't relate to anybody else. Because she trusts men. She knows how to deal with them. She sees that they protect, they give shelter, they care for them, they're sensitive. So she trusts that other men will do that. So when the father makes arrangements for the marriage, she trusts that the father has already checked all this and it's going to be nice. And then the husband has been trained properly. She trusts that he will take care. So that trust is there. So when there's trust, there can be surrender. Then she can busy herself with all the whatever her duties are and not worry about the others because she knows the husband will take care. And then from this, then she'll trust that the son will take care. But if the relationship with the father was bad, I mean, if your own father you can't have a good relationship with, how will you have with anybody else? Therefore, they develop very, very independent mentality like that, which is based on just no trust. The men never take care, so therefore they're going to do their own thing. So it's naturally means this can always be overcome. The point is the living entity being a sentient being, then by knowledge and practice and association can overcome any of these difficulties. So even if a girl's had, you know, bad situation in the home with the father, it's not that she can't change the mentality, but it just will take a conscious effort. While a girl has grown up in an environment where it's very, very pleasant with the father, naturally, without any endeavor, will be able to work within the environment with the men. So it's just a matter of whether it's consciously developed or unconsciously developed. You know, it's like with sannyas. One either naturally has the qualities of sannyas, or one, knowing what the qualities are, endeavors for them, and then in this way gains them. And in either way, you gain them. The goal is to gain those qualities. So both are considered sannyas. So with the women, it'll be the same, just like with the brahmachari. The goal is to develop one's complete attachment for Krishna. So one can either do that naturally as a naistika brahmachari, or acquire them through endeavor as the upakurvana who gets married. And then through the process of marriage, he'll develop those qualities. But the end result will be the same. So it's just the Vedas always recommend the situations in which the natural qualities will come, because the natural then, in all variety of situations, you know you'll follow them. While if it's simply the conscious one, whereas only because you're conscious of it, you do it, then sometimes in a strange situation you may forget, you know, due to lack of habit. But if one can consciously be aware for a long enough time, one can create new habit. And then the problem will be solved. Because the point is just as, you know, from lifetime to lifetime, you know, there's been different husbands and wives and all that, and different situations, and one is adjusting with that. So even within this lifetime, if one's had some bad difficulties in some relationships, one can, by practice, change that. It's very hard, though. You know, but it can be done. Yes.
So, it was very interesting because the father was very, he had such really nice manners in all the devotees, and the daughters were automatically trained to serve. And there's a lot of exposure to Western influence, but still, they had such deep rooted faith in that system because coming in a cultured lineage. And you could see the relationships that were working in the lifestyle. Really working relationships. That was actually very interesting for us to see that kind of thing going on in such a classic way.
It's very interesting is that these classical things that are talked about many times, you know, coming from a, you know, Malecha Yavana background, we'll just say, well, these are, you know, we've never heard, seen, smelled, touched, or, you know, any of these. That these must be, you know, thousands of years ago. But these examples, exactly, textbook, word for word, you know, transliterations that are here in the shlokas are still going on today. Mm. And there's not one or two cases of them. There's millions of cases of it. It's going on. But, you know, it's just one has to know what to look for. That's very nice. So. Okay. So I think anything else or we'll end here? Yes.
Does the relationship between a husband and wife also get reflected in the relationship between the, like the way that the wife deals with the husband? Is that the same way that the daughter will relate with her father?
Relate to her father and also see the relationships with, for the daughter with men and the whole concept of parampara, and for the son, the whole concept of authority, all come from the mother. Because the children know the mother first. They don't know who the father is. Like from the mother they learn who the father is. So if they see that the mother is very respectful and dealing very nicely with the father, then that instills in the children naturally the mood of respect and service and the faith in authority, you know, and the understanding that, you know, of shelter, protection. And because they have understood it and they have received it, then in the future they'll be able to give it. So generally it's, you see, it's very common that those who have grown up in families where the whole, you know, system works, then they're able to apply it in their own life. And those who don't, it's many times difficult, unless they were very observative. You know, that they would observe that this is the problem here, this is why this doesn't work in the family, and that's where that doesn't work, and this is why this whole thing fell apart. Then they'll be very careful in their own life to see that that's avoided. But generally such a person is quite rare. You know, generally, it just, as one experienced it, that's how one is going to naturally do it, right? Because, I mean, especially in the Western, the Gandharva marriage, just due to mutual affection, that someone gets married, one just, the affection is just happening automatically, right? It's not some planned, arranged thing, it just happens by the modes of nature. So one also feels and thinks that the whole marriage, the whole, everything in the marriage life will in the same way just go on so nicely. We so nicely became attached to each other. So nicely the whole marriage is just automatically on its own with no endeavor going to work. Like that. So that's generally what will happen. Very few are observant unless they're trained. If they're trained, especially pointed out what's going on, how things function, you know, what's happening, then, you know, with some endeavor, one can make things work. But it just takes longer. Okay. It's a slow process. But slow is better than nothing. Slow is better. Therefore, we see, probably in the previous purport, mentions that, okay, we're taking a bunch of Mleches and Yavanas and we're training them in Brahminical culture and to do the work of Brahmins. So in an emergency, this may be done. Right? But it's much nicer if these qualities are more naturally manifest and naturally imbibed. So at least the first generation, it may be a bit of an emergency situation. But Prabhupada's idea was the second generation wouldn't have that problem. They would grow up in gurukuls. They would grow up in nice family structures and communities. Like that, they wouldn't be exposed to, you know, all, so much of the, you know, culture that creates Mleches and Yavanas, you know, all the television and the crazy games and boys and girls associating with each other and all these different things. So he was trying to save the second generation from all that. Unfortunately, the second generation is a little too intimately connected with the first. So that's a bit of a weakness in the link in the process there.
Interesting, astrologically speaking, the final movement of marriage, if you take all the considerations of the classical astrologers, all the astrologers use,
it's
virtually impossible to find a super time, because it has to be so correct to make the whole marriage very easily malfunction thing, that like really difficult to find the time, like maybe 4 or 5 years, you know, 1 or 2 days.
Well, maybe we should do is go ahead for the next 100 years and pick out all the best times and then publish them in a book.
Marriage superlative head was maybe the best year for the last 4 years, 3-4 years, best day, best planetary conjunction.
In the last 3 or 4 years. Yeah. And then how many more years until we get such good days again? Another 3 years. Oh, okay. Worth waiting for, right? Yeah, that's the thing. Ultimately, is material world is, what is it? Bishta Gorta means a pit of poison. So, you know, try your best, it's still going to be a problem. Yes?
Well, if we could be like the Moonies and have these mass weddings on those special days.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's it.
Thousands of
you just work it out, yeah. You have that one on that day, then you have, yeah. 20,000
couples.
How many?
Some of them are huge in the paper, like 20,000 couples.
Yeah, definitely we could do. Go ahead. Yeah, we should plan. So then, that way, anyone who wants to get married then aims for those dates and then goes through proper training beforehand, very seriously. You know, leaves nothing to chance. You know, like that. Because see, is one can either go through the more settvic processes of knowledge by hearing from authorities and then practicing it, or one can go through the school of hard knocks. You know, means Cupid along with Maya Devi, then they have their system of training also. Unfortunately, by that system, by the time you know you get around this time for, you know, you're old, then you start to learn something. You know what? The other system's a little more efficient. Anything else?
Said that sometimes even if the authority is wrong, we have to follow him. Otherwise,
if the authority is wrong, we have to follow.
Otherwise, the system will get stopped.
It means as long as it's within the realm of what is to be done, right? It means the authority may have made a not so good managerialist decision, but that can always be changed. Once it starts to function, it can be seen it's wrong and be adjusted. Any good manager knows that better than wait for the perfect decision that may take 2 years, better to make a decision today and then run with it and adjust as you go along. Right? That's always best, because people have brains, you use them, and you correct. So sometimes they make a mistake. Here what's talking about is people who are addicted to sinful activities and this and that. That doesn't have to be taken. That association does not need to be followed. Like that. But it doesn't necessarily mean one is not necessarily spiritually strong. That's always best, is one is spiritually strong, but even if it's like not so strong, but not sinful, then it's okay. But if the sinful side is there, then that association should be avoided.
Maharaj, you were mentioning that by gurukul training and by being raised in a good family, then, you know, the future generations can learn this culture.
Hmm.
But right now, there's hardly any good families and there's hardly any gurukuls left that anybody wants to put their children in. So what would be the system to train people?
Well, first someone has to understand value something first. then you'll endeavor for it. Right? I mean, there's a saying in English, if at first you don't succeed, try again. So if one tries to establish proper family life, it doesn't seem to work, then, you know, one has to try to correct that. No one's giving up family life. Right? There's more marriages going on today than there were before. So it's not, no one's lost faith in the concept of the institution of marriage. Right? So if one has had problem in effecting proper education and training in that field, one should endeavor to find that way to get it to happen. That must happen. And if in education there's been difficulties, then one must endeavor to see how to correct that so that it will run nicely, that you will be able to get these points across to the students, and that the students will be benefited. You have to try. Otherwise, if one gives up, then what is the choice that we're selective and we give up the concept of training in proper social, you know, etiquettes and dealings and the system of education that matches that? That will give up as impractical. But we haven't given up the strict faith, you know, in the concept of man and woman associating together. Right? It's never given anybody any happiness in recorded history. Right? Things aren't working practically anywhere on the planet. But still, why is there so much faith in it? Because it's inherent in the nature, you know, of attachment. So it's inherent in the nature of a human being to follow Varnashram and the system of education. Right? So if we stick very dogmatically to the principles of animal life, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, but give up as impractical the principles of human life, we can't really say that that's a very well-informed decision or well-thought-out decision. Something goes wrong, we try again. So if one can't, then that means then those people who aren't willing to retry, then they shouldn't be doing those activities. Right? Those who can't see any way to get together all these, you know, things, then they shouldn't be the ones making the decisions. Those who can't see how education could work shouldn't be the ones involved in making the decisions on that. Those who can't see how marriages and all that should work shouldn't be the ones involved in it, or how communities should work shouldn't be involved. Right? But those who have faith in the systems and can see that the Vedas have a superior system, and one has a desire to follow that, and so therefore one will try according to the directions of the acharyas on their principles, and then try to establish the details. And one detail doesn't work, that doesn't mean the principle's bad. It just means it was the wrong detail. Try another detail. Well, you see, they're all on qualities. Brahman, his qualities, the Kshatriya, the qualities, the Vaishya, the qualities, the Shudra, the qualities, the woman, the qualities. So if something didn't work means the qualities weren't right. The people involved had the wrong qualities. They weren't the ones to be doing it. There was a problem in the past with teachers. Maybe they weren't the teachers. Maybe the parents didn't know how to raise their children, that the teacher got a human being as a student. You know, so many different things are there. So the faith in the systems must maintain. That's what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's points are. The faith in the instructions of the acharyas must remain. Others may follow, may not follow. That we can't be too worried about. We must maintain. You know, if Prabhupada went by how much faith his godbrothers had in the system of preaching in the West, I mean the concept of preaching in the West and the concept of organizing the Vaishnava community through a GBC managing body, then he would have given it up because every one of his godbrothers did. Or were not in a position to, you know, strongly speak on the subject and didn't get involved. And the big, you know, movers and shakers at the time, they did their thing and they just stood out of the way and just engaged himself in devotional service. But if he had gone on that, then he wouldn't be doing it. So, especially nowadays, we may have so many devotees who don't have faith in Prabhupada's system, what's given by Narad Muni and the Bhagavatam. But that doesn't mean that we should give it up. Who cares what the modern people say? Today they say one thing, tomorrow they say another thing. I mean, in the 1950s, the advertisement was, doctors say smoking cigarettes is good for health. That was the advertisement. It's recommended by doctors because it would keep you smoked, it would keep you thin. So those who are, you know, the women who are into being thin were really into smoking. You know, because you smoke, you didn't have to eat so much. So that kept you thin. A few years later, then they found out it gives you cancer. You know. So nowadays, whatever the modern culture says, what is it based on? What is their standard to judge it against? So what they like and don't like today doesn't mean tomorrow won't be the opposite. Right? You go back a few years, no woman would ever think of marrying a man who liked to sit around and talk about babies and change diapers. They wouldn't think of it. They wanted a man who had some strength. But now, the new age man, you know, he's right in there with the ladies, you know. He can do all the things they do and sit around and discuss, you know, this, you know, Pampers diapers or this one diapers or, you know, the different, you know, qualities. Of this one, the sticky thing is not quite good enough, so it falls off. And, you know, but I like the plastic pants, you know, they're really good, you know. And, you know, so... like that. So it's just a matter of time. It's the modes of nature. It's just the way the wind blows. So we can't take that very seriously. Because it's always changing.
Sotama is pointing out that since there's no good qualities in teaching in Kali Yuga, in order to keep the society going, they have to find the people's common interest.
They have to find a common interest.
To keep the society running.
Yeah.
And as people are being degraded more and more, the common interest becomes lower and lower.
Yes.
Like you said 50 years ago, you know, like just a few years ago, a woman wouldn't think of marrying a friendly man. You know, that's been dropped because the common interest is lower now. You know, 20 years ago, nobody would have accepted gays as proper part of culture, but now it's okay. You know, maybe 20 years ago, they accept something else and lower than that.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's just drop the standard.
Well, the Bhagavatam says at the end of the Kali Yuga, then people just have children just for something to eat. Right? You know, it's like you grow sabji in the fields. Well, you know, just grow kids. You know? And then when they're born, then you have a festival. You know? Huh? Yeah, love feast. Right? So, I mean, that's what's coming up. You know? Yes, coming attractions. Yes. Anything else? Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktabhinda ki, Jai Nitya Gaur Premanandi, Hare Krishna, Jai Hari.